This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, and this is episode 644 of the Late Round Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by FanDuel. Thanks for tuning in. The MLB season is in full swing, and you can play Body Armor's free-to-play pick'em contest with a $10,000 prize pool. Take a free swing at big cash prizes, courtesy of Body Armor. Just answer questions predicting the rivalry matchup between the Dodgers and Giants. The more you get right, the more points you'll earn, and the more cash you could win. Get your picks in before first pitch on June 10th at 10:15 p.m. Eastern for your chance to win a share of $10,000. You can sign up for the free contest at FanDuel.com/free/contest/BodyArmorEdge. Again, that's FanDuel.com/free/contest/BodyArmorEdge. Make sure to play this free pick'em contest for your chance to win $10,000. Good luck. The first question this week is from Patreon. It's from Kirby. It says, "Hey JJ, love the running back dead zone episode and discussion. Thanks. I haven't heard you discuss recently, but isn't a big part of the running back dead zone also the fact that the hit rates on wide receivers in that area of the draft are higher than that of running backs? Thanks, love the show and the Patreon." So I wanted to kick off today's show talking about this because yes, this is absolutely 100% a big part of the running back dead zone and its existence. I've been focusing on hit rates in the dead zone because I was trying to find ways to beat it. But yes, I've talked about the opportunity cost side of the dead zone a heck of a lot on the show. League-winning wide receivers are coming from that area of the draft pretty often. So not only are running back hit rates lower, but the cost in getting those players is quite high when you consider what you're foregoing in order to get one of those dead zone running backs. I talked about this a lot last year with Cooper Kupp. I had Cooper Kupp on my redraft rosters. I took him in a couple of dynasty startups last offseason too. But I won't sit here and say that I was on every podcast screaming at you to draft Cooper Kupp. I liked him, I rostered him, but I wasn't calling him out as one of the best values in drafts. Part of the reason I was getting him, though, was because of the running back dead zone. I wasn't drafting running backs in that area of the draft. So there were fewer choices. And fewer choices means a higher chance to get a player like Cooper Kupp. So yes, absolutely, opportunity cost matters in the dead zone. It's arguably the more important piece to it. But hit rates are also not great in that area of the draft. The next question is from Twitter. It's from @CardsonWentz. It says, "Great episode on the running back dead zone. Thank you. Can you give a few examples that fit the mold of young pass-catching running backs on good offenses?" So keep in mind that number one, we're not always going to have players who perfectly fit the three things that I talked about on the show earlier this week. And then number two, also keep in mind that the good offenses thing, that's more of a nice thing to have rather than something that will dramatically move the needle. It's really basic, but you want rookies, maybe second-year players, and you want pass catchers. The two players this year who I think fit this mold of running backs who can emerge from the dead zone are Breece Hall and Travis Etienne. Hall is a rookie, and while Michael Carter could steal some looks as a receiver, Hall's a good pass catcher too. He's being pushed down in drafts, or he's not going where like Najee Harris went last year as a rookie running back, mostly because of situation, not talent. And then you could argue the same thing for Etienne to some degree. He's a great pass catcher, and we know he should see a lot of work through the air. But he's not being pushed down because of talent. He's being pushed down because he's coming off this foot injury. And we haven't seen him play in the NFL. So I think the two running backs you can confidently draft in the dead zone this year are Breece Hall and Travis Etienne. At least that's my take right now. This next question is from Patreon. It's from Lefty Joe F. It says, "Hey, hey, JJ. Will you give me permission to go #late round tight end and draft Cole Kmet in the later rounds? In early best ball drafts, my highest rostered players, not even just tight ends, but rostered players, are Rob Gronkowski, Irv Smith, and Cole Kmet. They're three players who I think are just generally undervalued at their ADP. So if you're going with a late round tight end approach, which I think makes sense if you don't get one of those elite guys early, or if you just want to go with a late round tight end approach in general, which makes sense, I think Kmet is totally reasonable. He should be able to walk into a pretty high target share in that offense. And the general assumption right now is that Chicago is going to be a run-heavy team, which they should be. That's how we should project things. I have them projected to run the ball a good bit. But we have to be open-minded. That might not happen to the degree that we think it's going to happen. And we have to remember that game script can dictate pass rates. So if Chicago is bad, which is entirely possible, then they'll still be forced to throw. Kmet was a good prospect, and he fits the athletic tight end mold that we should look for with breakout tight ends. So I'm cool with him. I give you permission to draft him. This next question is from @AndrewHallFF. Thoughts on Tyler Algier? Is he the next Olesen or Hawkins, who were both busts, or is he going to be the real deal? So can I say somewhere in the middle? I think Tyler Algier is a much better prospect than Kadri Olesen, and that's coming from someone who went to Pitt. And he's definitely a better and different prospect than Javion Hawkins. I remember sitting on this show last year talking about how the Hawkins hype just didn't make any sense to me. He was an undrafted, undersized running back with a below-average stat score in my model. It was hard to get behind him. Olesen is more the Algier type. He's a bigger-bodied, bruising running back. But he didn't have close to the same production profile as Algier did. Olesen had a 58th percentile score in my prospect model with a negative 4% draft capital delta, meaning the model saw him as overdrafted. Algier is a 70th percentile prospect with a positive 7.5% draft capital delta. So the model really likes Algier versus draft capital, and that's because he had a pretty great production profile. Now, I would be surprised if Algier is some like 5-year starter in the NFL. Maybe it happens, but he doesn't profile as a stud. He does profile as a player who could have these one-off seasons where he squeaks into that RB2 range. Remember Sean Green from years ago? He could have seasons like that. And honestly, one of Algier's comps in my model was James Conner. James Conner is probably the upper end of his range of outcomes. But since there's not a ton of competition there in 2022, maybe that all happens during his rookie year. Maybe he ends up being an RB2. I do like Algier more than those other prospects, though, a lot more. I just don't know if he really has this crazy, crazy high ceiling. This next question is from @ShockerManner, and it says, what do you think about Damian Pierce? I know you like Burkhead and Mack is there too, but I see people rank him as a first-round rookie pick this year. So I had no idea that I was a Burkhead truther. If this is something from years ago, I may have been cool with Burkhead and redraft like a while ago, but I wouldn't let someone like Rex Burkhead affect a pick in a dynasty league. Not right now. Probably not ever. But Pierce was one of the tougher evaluations for me this year at running back because my model didn't like him that much. And that's because he wasn't a full-time workhorse in college. When that's the case, you have to be a semi-outlier to be really impactful at the NFL level in fantasy football. Like some players like an Alvin Kamara, he at least had a really good receiving profile coming out. Damian Pierce doesn't have that. His numbers across the board are really average. But his efficiency numbers are good. He's a great tackle breaker. There are positive traits for Pierce. And he's walking into a situation where there are absolutely zero established starters in that backfield. He can overcome that competition. Now, as for his rookie draft ADP, yeah, I would not get Pierce in the first round of my rookie drafts. And he goes there sometimes. Right now, he's 16th overall in rookie drafts, according to DynastyLeagueFootball.com, but I've seen him go in the first. I have my Dynasty rankings up on the Late Round Fantasy Football Patreon, so you can check those out if you want. But Pierce should not be a first-round rookie draft selection. He was a day 3 pick. You would be drafting him over some really good wide receivers who were selected in the first and second round if you made him a first-rounder in your rookie draft. So I'm off of him there. But I do think he's interesting in redraft. As I talked about on the Ambiguous Backfields episode from last week, we know that late-round RB1s, team RB1s, have pretty good hit rates, all things considered. So Pierce makes sense from a historical ADP analysis standpoint, and he's at least got some intrigue as a prospect, even if my model wasn't in love. I think you can throw darts at this entire backfield with different redraft teams. Marlon Mack is undervalued in best ball, in my opinion, but Pierce has an intriguing price tag too. As a first rounder in rookie drafts, though, I'm off of Pierce there. It reminds me too much of what we saw with Samaje Perine when he came out years ago. You always should lead with talent first and foremost. The last question this week is from Patreon, and it's from Paxman. It says, is there a player you think consensus is very wrong about? So since it's still sort of rookie draft season, and since it's best ball season, I'm going to give you two answers. One for rookie drafts, one for best ball. For rookie drafts, I'm going to go Jahan Dotson. Entering this year's draft, I did not think that I'd be drafting a lot of Jahan Dotson. But I've been in super flex drafts where he's been like a mid-second round pick. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I get the concerns. Dotson doesn't have perfect size for a fantasy wide receiver. But neither does Garrett Wilson. Neither does Jameson Williams. People aren't knocking those guys nearly as much for size. And yeah, they had other things going for them, like early declare status. But early declare status is not everything. It's just an input. And I think the dynasty community has almost taken it too far. If you look at the 12 non-early declare first-round wide receivers since 2011, they have not been great. But only 5 of those 12 had better best season receiving yards per team pass attempt rates than Dotson had. That's one of the more predictive production metrics for college wide receivers. Those 5 wide receivers: Corey Davis, AJ Jenkins, Kendall Wright, Brandon Ayuk, and Devontae Smith. Jenkins was a bust. Kendall Wright at least had some production. Corey Davis had at least some production too. And Brandon Ayuk and Devontae Smith have at least held up decently well in the market. And they might be good, we just don't know yet. The other 7 were Josh Doctson, Devontae Parker, Kevin White, Philip Dorsett, Tavon Austin, Michael Floyd, and Kadarius Toney. The productive non-early declares in the first round have undoubtedly been better because production matters. Not only that, but among that group, Dotson is one of 2 to hit a best season receptions per game rate of 6, a best season yards per team pass attempt rate of 2.8, and a best season touchdown share of 32%. He was a good bit higher with most of those marks. Those are the 3 main production metrics for wide receivers in my model, and the only other non-early declare first-round wideout over this time frame to hit those marks has been Devontae Smith. I think we've got to chill a little bit with this early declare stuff. Dotson was still productive. We're not talking about a Kadarius Toney-like profile, and Kadarius Toney still might pan out. I actually love Toney this year. I love where Toney is going, but Dotson had a pretty decent production profile overall, making it all the more surprising that he's fallen so much in rookie drafts, because the dynasty community loves production. And the landing spot really isn't that bad. You could argue the landing spots for the other first-round wide receivers are just as bad, pretty easily. Dotson's target share projection for here in year 1, it's really not that far off compared to the other first-round wide receivers. Basically, I just don't fully understand the slide. He was a 16th overall pick with pretty good production. He's just smaller in size and he wasn't an early declare. But I can't imagine taking someone like Damian Pierce over Jahan Dotson from a process standpoint. Even David Bell, who I love. To me, the Dotson rookie draft ADP just does not make that much sense. So that's why I'm calling him out here. And then as for my best ball pick, I mentioned his name earlier, but I think Rob Gronkowski is really mispriced right now. Now, I understand that he's not even on an NFL team. I get it. But he's tight end 11 in best ball drafts. He goes well beyond pick 100. I actually sent a late round fantasy football newsletter with these talking points earlier this week. And I actually sent a Jahan Dotson one a few weeks ago. So anyone who's a subscriber, first off, thank you. But second, you're ahead of the game. This information is not new. And you can become a newsletter subscriber for absolutely free by going to lateround.com and signing up with your email address. That's where all my written content is going now. So the 15 transactions column in season, it's going to be in the newsletter. So go sign up. But anyway, Gronk. Last year, Gronk ranked behind only Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce in fantasy points per game. And only Andrews and Hunter Henry had more end zone targets per game. Antonio Brown is gone. Brown not only ranked high in end zone targets per game, and he not only captured a decent target share when he was active, but when Rob Gronkowski was healthy last year, without Antonio Brown in the lineup, he averaged a 21% target share per game. And he was a top 10 tight end in 5 of those 7 games. Russell Gage is there now, but he's not Antonio Brown. And Chris Godwin is rehabbing from his ACL tear. There's no telling how effective he's going to be at the start of the season or even throughout the season. I mean, how does Gronk not have top 5 tight end upside? How does he not have top 3 tight end upside in an offense with the greatest quarterback of all time and in an offense that has thrown the ball more than any other NFL team over the last 2 years? If Gronk signed with Tampa Bay tomorrow, he would be, or he should be, the tight end 6 in fantasy football. Legitimately. I don't see how that's even a spicy take. But he's going significantly later than that, simply because he hasn't joined the Bucs. He doesn't have a contract. And maybe he does retire. That's certainly possible. But the Bucs are evidently optimistic that he's going to play, and he was training with Tom Brady last month. And the NFC is wide open. It would make sense for him to give it one last try. Even if he doesn't come back, the opportunity cost in getting Gronk is not significant at all. You can make a 3 tight end build with him and still have a shot if one of those other tight ends ends up hitting. Rob Gronkowski right now is my highest rostered player. And I'm putting myself out there because there's a chance that he does not sign. And people are going to come at me and say, you're an idiot. But I just think that he's wildly undervalued given the upside. Because if he signed tomorrow, he would shoot up draft boards. And if he doesn't sign, you're still not sunk given where he's going in drafts. It's sort of the perfect low-risk, high-reward scenario. That's why I'm drafting Rob Gronkowski. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Fantasy Football Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. And please, please, please check out lateround.com. You can pre-order the Late Round Draft Guide right now and get it in your inbox right when it launches on July 1st. I promise you that you will not regret it. I know I sound like a salesman, but I'm serious. I'm putting a ton of effort into this guide, and it's going to be updated weekly from July 1st through August. But in the guide, I'm walking through my draft approach with each position. I'm doing positional value analysis. There's talk about why regression is so important, how to structure tiers, and then I'll have my top values, avoids, and dart throws that are constantly updated. And my rankings will be in there too. So definitely pre-order that thing before it goes up to $24.99 on July 1st. Right now it's $19.99. I promise it'll be unlike any other draft guide that you've read before. Thanks for the support, everyone. I really, really appreciate it. Hope you enjoy your weekend.